המון תודה והלם גם הוא איזה עולם נפלא.
Like a butterfly, come along and sing with us. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Sounds of love. Hallelujah. The sun shines above. Hallelujah. The bells will go ringing and echo from dawn.
By the power of His love. Worthy is the Lamb who was and is to come. Today we welcome you, Lord, come. Spirit and the bride say, come, come, glorious Father, come, King of kings and Lord of lords. Come, glorious Father, come today, we welcome you, Lord. Spirit and the bride say, come. Worthy is the Lamb who was and is to come. Come, King of kings, come, Lord of lords. Worthy is the Lamb who was and is to come. Today we welcome you, Lord, come. Spirit and the bride say, come, come, glorious Father, come, King of kings and Lord of lords. Come, glorious Father, come today, we welcome you, Lord. Spirit and the bride say, come. Worthy is the Lamb who was and is to come.
Hey everyone, this is Jerry. Hope everyone is doing well. I am actually particularly encouraged right now in general. As I have mentioned many times over the last couple of weeks, that I can see that things are kicking up to a higher gear. There's a lot going on. Some of it, unfortunately, I think it's probably not appropriate for me to share in specifics in consideration of others, but there's just really a lot going on, and I'll just reference very briefly the February 5th date set that we had and how many ways those of us in our rapture-centric church family here were led to it. And things were picking up before then. I was amazed. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, sort of, I was getting dreams, dream/visions. I was getting lots of garage downloads, and other people started sending me things. And there was no doubt that it was a major, major uptick. And honestly, I think any of us were looking for any of it. I know I wasn't, and I'm pretty sure the rest of us, let's put it this way, I don't think we were making an extra effort to find things where we were all sort of being commonly spiritually led to find things at the same time, about the same days, and so on. You know, we do this because we're led to do it. And his power has been all over us, all over our group, our Jesus Christ, our Father in heaven. This is a walk where we cannot insist on understanding everything we do. I had an experience just last night. It was very funny. He gave me some things to say over the course of the show, and it offered actually a contradiction to something in a different context that I had said to someone else recently. And even while I was speaking these things, I was aware of the contradiction. And I was just going over that with him. It was brought back to mind as I was sort of looking at things for tonight's show. It was brought back to mind, and am I doing what you want me to do? And I'm just asking him, and the answer that I'm getting is, yeah, I did everything that I said was what he wanted me to do and say. So I understand the comments. I understand the context. I understand the essence of what was behind it. But if one were to go back and parse a transcript, for example, I don't know what it would look like. It would have some kind of a different appearance, I think. So, anyway, I am I'm very encouraged today in general. At the same time, I'm also very aware of how incredibly challenging it is to walk this walk. We were given very different expectations when we gathered as a rapture-centric family a couple of years ago. And quite frankly, many of us who were rapture watchers long before that, we had very different expectations for a long time. In fact, when I came to RCC and began to privately and then eventually was able to log on and so on, I had already, my belief system had not changed whatsoever, but I still knew, I could still see everything happening in the world rolling towards the end time events. I could see the players in place. I could see things lining up. I could see the trends, which were all pointing in one direction. But he had taken me through a couple of periods when I was doing study and research, and just said rest. And I did. Some of the written things that I was doing, I set that aside for months. I did other things. I watched the news. Also, I was drawn into some other studies of totally different, apparently different subject matter. Although at this point, looking back, I think I see some essence of why he had me doing it, some of the things that he had me do. But by the time RCC came along, by the time I ran across it, which was right about exactly a year ago today, at least I think the first live show that I heard was actually the February 21st Miracle Show. I had heard and listened to at least portions of both the morning and the evening show in the archives. At that point, I could tell the Lord was drawing me in that direction. And he did do it through Judy's son's testimony and the things that came out of that, the YouTube channel, and so on and so forth. And quite frankly, it was definitely anointed, okay. But it was also quirky and strange enough that it got my attention, that I guess God just drew me to it. So what I'm saying is I was already, by the time I started becoming mentally involved in following RCC, of course, it's gone a lot farther than that now. I was already, I mean, I had had months where I was pondering what I was going to do with myself, because as far as I was concerned, while I didn't know the timing in the world, I knew that he had given me a lot of frameworks, a lot of dates, a lot of perspectives to see and track the evolution of events, and do a tremendous amount of Bible study, particularly prophetic Bible study. And not only prophetic Bible study, but also understanding the past as a projects towards the future biblically. And I'd done a lot of that, and I was kind of tired of it. I totally believed it all. I know God was leading me in it. He had given me tremendously powerful confirmations of things that I had done. And because I asked, there were some things that he led me into that caused me to be really concerned that what I was concluding and sharing with others was correct. I believed it was, and but there were times when it was out of the ordinary enough that I very directly checked with him, and even though he was encouraging me to go through, and even after I shared it, I was like, God, I hope this was what you wanted me to do. I hope it was okay. When I really had a serious question, and it was usually about a serious revelation, he would meet me, as he still does, and very often that same night, with an answer, and they've been very powerful. So what I'm saying is it's not that I had any doubt or consideration about what he was having me do, but I was getting tired of it. He had told me to rest. I got the sense that I needed to back away from it a little bit. There is a lot of stress in doing this, and there's also stress with people when they start to interact. And I could tell, honestly, what he was doing partly was squeezing me, as he had often done before that, out of one arena, out of one in one area, and I did not know if he was sending me to another, but I knew he had really reduced the drive, and in fact had created several motivations internally in me that I needed to stop doing some of the things that I had been doing. But I left a vacuum, and I did not know what that was going to lead to. So this is a very long way of saying, by the time I came to RCC, I was starting to consider what I might do with myself in the world. There were various things in my own personal circumstances that were question marks. And, I was thinking, well, should I go do this thing or that thing? And what am I really supposed to do with myself? Now, there were other things, family considerations that I wouldn't have had in years in the past. And so that was modifying the way I looked at some things. But for example, I wasn't planning on just returning and doing exactly what I've been doing 5 or 10 years before that. But I was like, what do I do now? And I'm sure we have all had to address some questions like that. And honestly, I'm not really addressing that question at the moment. Personally, this is not a health self-help little monologue. But I know others are. And not to belabor the point, but this has been really hard. We have followed him. He has given us a lot of expectations. Walking the path he has asked us to walk on is stepping way, way out there compared to a lot of people who consider themselves believers, followers, even label themselves as Christians. By that I mean just a simple label. Because the labels aren't very meaningful. It's the walk, it's our heart, it's the personal relationship, which he encourages us to have. And we've had an intense personal relationship, and he is absolutely on the end of the rope that jerks us in one direction and the other. We have totally lived out the rapture donkey jackass thing, I think, well beyond any people that I know of, although it's easy for me to imagine that, you know, other people have had very different kinds of experiences where they've had, you know, in a different kind of a forum, different circumstances where they follow the Lord just as intensely and often without end result was going to be. I guess this is just a preface. I'm saying, you know what, it's hard. And it's okay to pray for reassurance, pray for hope, pray for clarity. And this is a really hard thing that we all do. We've seen it take its toll. But I think a lot of people have grown from it, too. Even people who aren't sort of regulars around now. And there's been a lot of growth. And anything that takes you back to him specifically and intensively can be a good thing. And we've spoken a lot here and particularly recently about how, the condition of the world at this point and the declining condition of the world is as God wishes it to be. He has an end-time scenario that has been initiated. So our personal conditions are as he wants them to be. And even if they're difficult and challenging, that doesn't necessarily mean he wants us to endure difficulty, but it does mean he may want us to change something about what we're doing. And the many phases, the different things that I've done in my life have always been a mixture of intrigue, interest, edification, blessing, and disappointment and frustration and uncertainty. And he has mixed those things in a way to take me from one setting to another and another. And this goes back through my entire adult life. And so what I'm doing right now, and the reason I'm talking about this, is I'm expressing empathy for everybody who has perhaps found themselves being challenged by this extraordinary waiting and uncertainty that that we've been asked to go through. It would be much simpler to say, oh yeah, I know Jesus is coming, and when he does, I'll know it, and I'm not going to worry about it. That would be a lot simpler, a lot easier. I suppose individually we all would have reacted to that differently, but we've been called to do something different. And I would hope that those of us who've continued to pursue this and the garage work and everything, that we're doing it out of a leading and not a sense of desperation. Tonight I have a lot of really good garage work that Michelle has forwarded, and I kind of wanted to really make it my primary point to go over some of that, because there's a little bit of it that's backed up a little bit. I thought some of it was, and really quite a lot of it was very good. And the last several times she's forwarded things to me, what she's forwarded has sort of been bumped to the back seat as a result of other things that were being brought before me to share on the show. So tonight I want to kind of give it primary billing, and we'll go through some of those things and then maybe discuss them a little bit. I have one or two things that I think are on the short side that I'm just going to mention that have sort of come up in front of me in the last few days. So what I'm saying is, here we are in late February, and none of us expected to be here then. None of us, I didn't expect here to be here a year ago. I really didn't. I did know there were some critical dates that were coming up, and absolutely, without any doubt, we have seen some very, very important days come and go. So it's just that we can't completely know what's happening from God's perspective. I found the place that puts up the videos of this Jewish boy, this 15-year-old who was taken to heaven on the last day of Sukkot, Tabernacles. He had a testimony over an hour long that there's the video in Hebrew, which he spoke in. And then there's a English translation video with subtitles that is for part of his discussion. But one of the places it came up in front of me today, and this site that carries videos of him, there is a translation, and it's a little bit disjointed because, if my understanding is correct, it was translated from Hebrew to French and then electronically from French to English. And so there's some things like it says she where it ought to say he in some places and things like that. So once again, like many of the things that we discuss here, you can't get too religious about it, or you get all concerned. What do you mean? You can't get all wound up about it. You just have to take the best you can out of it and go from there. And I was reminded that he said, I found this and I started reading it. I'm not even all the way through it right now. And I was reminded that he said that World War III had started on September 11th, 2015. There are a couple of really interesting things that happened that day. One was the crane collapse at the mosque at Mecca, and it killed several hundred people. That was 13 days ahead of the huge crushing of people in the pilgrimage in the streets. Some kind of stampede-like thing happened, and at least, and this could be almost an extremely conservative consideration, but at least 2,300 people died there, and there are some numbers have been published over 4,000 on that day. But on the 11th, 13 days earlier, this crane collapsed into the mosque at Mecca. And the other thing, one of the other notable things was the lightning bolt, and the picture of the lightning bolt striking, I think it was the Washington Monument on that day. It was either that, because in succession, there was one on the monument and one on the Capitol building. They were both very noteworthy circulated pictures. It was one of the two. And a little bit eerie on the 11th of September, 9/11. And, of course, that's the 14-year anniversary. I do believe the 14-year period is highly prophetic. You can see that it's true in Scripture. The best example is that Jacob worked for Rachel for 14 years. In the middle of it, he received Leah as a wife, but he was always intending to have Rachel as a wife. And there are other prophetic periods. For example, Joseph interpreting Pharaoh's dream, seven fat years, lean years. If you use 9/11/2001 as a starting point, obviously 9/11/2010 is 14 years later. And in that period of time, you have exactly seven fat years and seven lean years. Because the lean year is occurring after the financial collapse in late 2007 and 8. Eight being probably the pinnacle. And therefore, you have 7 years, 2015. It's a very simple, straightforward pattern. So, I'll try not to ramble, get too far off my focus here, but him mentioning this Natan in Hebrew, mentioning that the World War III started then, and he said it was done in secret, that it was done quietly, and then was escalating in phases. And think of it this way. God is allowing and orchestrating this end time scenario, which has all been prophesied. And could it be that he is starting it on his schedule? So it's 3 days before Rosh Hashanah in 2015. So here we are a few months later, and more things continue to go on. Today, this evening, begins Purim Katan. It is exactly like Purim in the next month, except they have two 12th months in seven of the 19 Hebrew calendar year cycles, and or in the 19-year cycle in the 19 different year patterns. There are seven where they add an extra month, and you have Adar 1 and Adar 2, or Adar A and Adar B, and they're both the 12th month, and they're both considered appropriate Purims. And one is not stronger than the other. They're both powerful. And today happens to be a full moon, because Purim occurs in the middle of the Jewish month. And so here we are looking at those things, and Purim obviously is about Esther and the bride, and the queen, and also it's a transposition of a Jewish bride and a Gentile bride. So we're in this time frame, the 23rd, which has begun now from a Hebraic point of view. It was a day that we've been brought to. We'll see what it brings for all of us. But it is a I'm just going to say, not that I'm trying to project anything more about this day than any other day, other than it's one we've been led to. Other, obviously, in the Jewish calendar, it's interesting. I just, around me, I'm really encouraged. I'm encouraged in a peculiar way because, quite frankly, I see. I don't even have to see it. I just know things. I'm reminded right now of the vision that Judy's son had, little John, about we would be falling over the finish line. I believe we're really close to that finish line. And I believe, we're that's insight, let's put it that way. And so our eyes are a little bit blurry, and we're really to keep moving our legs, and hopefully we really do get to that line. And but I am peculiarly encouraged tonight and in general, and I still have tremendous peace, and I still have things that he's showing me, very interesting things. So what I'm saying is this World War III, Natan's declaration was from God, that it started on the 11th of September. There were events, interesting events in the world on that day and subsequently. I'm going to transition to a couple short points that I've been led to before I get into the Michelle's things. One is I was on the phone the other day, and I had a pretty much a spontaneous utterance, it was a very short subject. It was about John Kerry, and I don't know if you want to call this a knowing or just a spontaneous utterance, whatever it was. In consideration of all the world events and all of the jockeying for this agreement and that agreement and so on and so forth, all his semi-frantic diplomacy and quite frankly, some of the pathetic things that he has uttered over the last few months in support of the things he was publicly trying to make happen. And I just had a knowing. I had two images in my mind. One was Neville Chamberlain, regardless of his actual merits, and he had some. He became famous for an appeasement policy with Hitler. And he came back and was famously stepped off the airplane waving an agreement with Hitler. And England was trying to avoid a war with Germany at that point. They were not prepared at all for a war with Germany. And he was happy to have deferred it. However, he uttered other things like peace in our time and things like that. And offered assurances that Hitler would not, by giving up something, a German portion of Eastern Europe, Germanic portion of Eastern Europe, that Hitler was assured him that he wouldn't attack Poland, among other places, even though it was obvious that was one of the things they wanted to do. And then, of course, a year and a half later or so, they did. And so he was embarrassed publicly. The images that came to my mind were Chamberlain coming off of the airplane, waving a piece of paper. And another image that was brought to my mind was Lee Harvey Oswald. And of all of the publicly pre-planned, orchestrated events that that we have seen perpetrated internationally, that one that he was involved in, and he was involved, was the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And the opinions of John F. Kennedy were not actually very high at the time that he was assassinated. Public opinion was not largely in favor, actually, in spite of what you would, the impression you would get today with all the things that are said. However, in retrospect, if you look at the things he did and said and compare them to all of his successors, while he was a little ham-fisted and unsophisticated about certain things, there were other things where he was pretty good. Unfortunately, he was crossed paths with the wrong people. And anyway, so Neville Chamberlain is an example of diplomatic embarrassment. And Lee Harvey Oswald is an example of let's call it a false flag or a pre-staged event patsy. Oswald obviously was a patsy in this situation if you assess all the information and can see how much forethought and planning went into it. Oswald, by whatever level of discernment you want to use, was a patsy. And the combined notion that I had was that Oswald and Chamberlain together represent a depiction of what John Kerry is being prepared to be. I'm not saying anything about what may happen to his person physically. What I'm saying is he is being used to say and do things and try to connect people in a way that may appear to succeed, but in the end will utterly fail and become a huge embarrassment, and the blame will go to him. So I believe this is a knowing and I'm just sharing it. So combine the images of Neville Chamberlain and Lee Harvey Oswald, and you have a diplomatic failure who will become a patsy for something big. It could even be World War III when it's officially declared or acknowledged. I'm not sure. But what I do know is the background on this is that a lot of the diplomatic efforts he's been involved in and being forced or willingly making these bold public statements about with all these different leaders who clearly don't have much respect for him, is what the things he's proposing and trying to claim he's going to do or succeed in actually are in the opposite direction of the way the New World Order types are leading the world intentionally. So he has been pre-selected to be the patsy for the world diplomacy that fails and brings about World War III. This boy Natan, he says flat out that Obama is Gog. Gog will start World War III, so that Obama will start World War III and the real shooting war. And he says something will happen that will dramatically change everything pretty much in a day, and then everything is just going to start to really heat up. So I believe that Kerry's being set up for this role of patsy and fool in the diplomatic errands he's been engaging in. The other thing that I had an insight that I had today. I was looking at the news, and there's been so much talk about the Oscars. The Oscars occur, the official awards ceremony, on Sunday night. And they have gone out of their way to really draw race into this event. And in a year where they had pre-selected Chris Rock, who is a black comedian, as the show's host, they've managed to not nominate a single, apparently, black performer, at least for the major awards. I'm not that into the details in this case. So, but what I'm saying is it's a major public discussion right now. And I saw a headline a few hours ago about how black people in show business are encouraging and almost leading a movement to get Chris Rock to be quite militant during the show, in whatever way, to call people out and to embarrass them for this quote-unquote all-white Oscars. And what I realized is this entire thing is a put-up job, is entirely fitting into the desire by the leadership in this nation to create high levels of racial tension. And so the way this is playing out is fitting right into their hands. And it's quite possible you're going to see something on the order of the protest movements and things that we saw in the middle and late 60s during public events, where it becomes quite controversial and shocking. I don't know what it might be. I don't know how it's going to go. It might be that they're simply playing it up for ratings, just to, for people to see, oh, what's going to happen? I don't know. But what I do know is this fits the template of an event that would be meant to increase racial tension in this nation. And I just want to say outright, again, which I've said on other occasions when there has been events attempting to stir up racial tension, the enemies in this situation will not be in the streets in any color or behind any badge. It's absolutely the majority of the people in this nation are being used by people who are pulling strings at a high level. It is the unseen hand that is doing this damage and wants to set people against each other for chaos so that they can keep control. Chaos management theory. That's what this is. It's cynical. It's nasty. And it's what's being used, and it's what they want to do, because the more chaos they have, the fewer questions are asked in order to create order. And creating order is a government and an unseen hand approach to simply taking more power and taking rights and freedoms away from us. So anyway, a little warning about the Oscars, the timing of it, and the theme, the essential theme right now. It's all going to be about black and white. Where have we heard about black and white before? Black and white, black and white. Well, we've played a couple of songs here about that, but right now I'm just going to go and remind you that the black and white above below theme is definitely in the occult and associated with the people who would run this country. Okay, so those are my items there. Now it's time to get to Michelle stuff, because I really do want to get to it. Here we go. Michelle sent me this email on the 18th, and this is my first, I read it, but it's first my chance to really speak about it. So this is actually fairly lengthy, and I don't know if I'll take a pause in the middle of it or not, but anyway, we'll see how it goes. Michelle writes, I have some garage work that is perhaps pointing to our departure on or around March 16th in the worldwide rapture on March 23rd or 24th, which is Purim. This is the second Purim this year. Perhaps the most significant thing is the Elijah pattern. The second set of 27 days ended on the 14th of December 2015, which was the end of Hanukkah. And there are one, that's also, by the way, 33 days after Natan's indication of the beginning of World War III. And there are 100 days to March 23rd and 101 days to March 24th. Before the pattern started, there were also 100 days inclusive of November 20th to February 28th and 101 days exclusive of November 19th to November 28th. I'm assuming you'll recognize what dates. We've spoken about these many times. So you have the repeated Elijah pattern, 300 plus 27 plus 300 plus 27, surrounded by 100 or 101 days on either side of it. That there could be a 102 days on either side of the pattern. If you do an inclusive day count starting on November 19th, it would take us to March 25th, which is Good Friday. I don't see an extension of the pattern beyond March 25th unless you consider the 84 days as part of the pattern. And I think Jerry said that he was getting the impression the 84 days were not part of the pattern. That is correct. sort of upon further review, I went back and I tried to get some confirmations about it, and I think I did. I was always a little unsure about those 84 days, which, by the way, are composed of two segments of 42. It's even likely that they're going to play into something at some point because they come out of the same two chapters in 2 Kings that the others do. But I think, let me say it this way. I think they may not be part of our current pattern. I think they may reflect some other set of circumstances. Since the announcement of our translation occurred 7 to 8 days before the pattern started, then it would make sense that our translation would be that same time period before the end of the pattern. 7 to 8 days prior to the end would be around on or around March 16th. Also, Kevin has been pointed out before, there were 40 inclusive days from the 19th of November 28th, which was Kevin's translation. Rosemary has described a recent experience of revelation to be similar when God fell on Nate. I don't think we know the exact date of when God fell on her, but we estimate it to be around February 5th. 40 days exclusive of February 5th is March 16th. This is a very poignant time period, in my opinion. As Sherry pointed out on yesterday's show, there are 40-day time periods surrounding Jesus' life ministry. 40 days of being tested in the wilderness after he was baptized. And really, it was 40 days of fasting. Depending on, you see how it's described in different ways. He is described for fasting for 40 days and 40 nights. And then he was taken out of the desert and tempted by the devil. So a couple of different ways to look at that. Anyway, after he was baptized 40 days after his resurrection, when he appeared to various people before his final resurrection or at Pentecost, which was not when he was finally taken up. Actually, that was 7 or 8 days. I think it was 8 days before Pentecost that he was taken up. So perhaps, like Jesus, RCC will have 40 days at our beginning when God fell on little John, and at our end, 40 days after God falling on Rose. So let me reprise that. I think Michelle gets to the eclipse thing. I want to mention eclipses, but at most, I want to mention this resurrection appearances of Jesus. Jesus was in the tomb for 3 days, however you want to count the 3 days. The day he rose out of the tomb was on Sunday, which is called the first day of the week. That day, and for the next 39 days, Jesus appeared to the apostles every day at some point in time, taught them and shared experiences with them. So third day plus 38 days. So 38, it's probably good for me to do this because that way I can add information. But if you go, our best understanding is that he was, and we don't quite understand this, but he was apparently crucified on Passover, although I've seen some things that indicate it could have been the day before. But in any event, let's just say he was crucified on the 15th of the Jewish month, Passover, because that is the day they sacrificed the sacrificial lambs. So on Passover, on the 15th of the month, and then he would have been in the ground that night, the next night, and probably not another night. Probably, in fact, he rose on the third day, and counting each day, partial day, as a day. And that was a common practice in those ancient times. So that would have been the 17th of the month, the Jewish month. And for 40 days from that point forward, he would have been appearing to people. So the 17th, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2. That'll take you to the 27th of Iyar, which is the second month, and the 42nd day of the Omer, and that ought to be the day that Jesus went up into the clouds, as recorded in Acts 1:11. Then, if you go 8 days from there to the 6th of Sivan, that's Passover, and 8 days later is when the Holy Spirit came in the morning. So I just thought I'd clarify that. There's a lot of it's a fine point that people don't always realize. So, but here's the other thing. Just looking at the calendar, 40 days for the translated Jesus Christ after his resurrection to be appearing to the apostles, that's actually a really long time for something so extraordinary. And there's the tradition that all the people who rose out of the grave, the patriarchs, testified to his person and his identity. That they were, apparently, they may have all been doing the same thing to different people over that period of time, not just that day, but perhaps for 40 days. And there's different traditions about that. Okay, the other thing I mentioned I want to go back into was the eclipses. March 9th, 16th, is exactly 1 week after a total solar eclipse on the 9th of March. This is poignant for two reasons. First of all, my signing experience. First of all, this period she's looking at, 40 days, it happens to be, the 5th happens to be my birthday. And then to the 16th of March, but also we have my signing experience, which the Lord told me I could start, that I could try to sign in for the very first time into chat to interact with the RCC in 2014, on Passover, which was the first of the lunar tetrad eclipses. And that was the 15th of April that year. And I was not able to succeed until exactly 14 days later. And that 14th day happened to be an annular solar eclipse, which is almost a total, but it leaves a ring around the outside. And so the solar eclipse represents, especially total, represents a kind of a success in my signing experience. So exactly 7 days later, after that total solar eclipse, is March 16th, which Michelle has pointed out. I also want to point out that there is it's called a prenumbral, I don't know if I said that right. Anyway, it's a minor lunar eclipse. It's just a shadowing of the moon as the Earth's shadow passes by. It is not a total or even a strong eclipse, but there is one on the 23rd of March, which, as she said, is Purim. Okay, back to Michelle's email. Also, there's a way to connect March 16th with February 5th of this year. The 27-day offset of March 16th would be February 18th today. February 18th on the Julian calendar is February 5th. So March 16th connects with December 28, 2013, February 28, 2014, and February 5th, 2016. As I mentioned last night, it would be ironic if the worldwide rapture happens on Purim, which is the day the Jews celebrate their victory, since Christians would be getting their victory, but not the Jews, who don't recognize Jesus as Messiah. Also, Easter is March 27th, so if the worldwide rapture is March 23rd or 24th, then 3 days of darkness would correspond to the days Jesus would be in the tomb before he would rise on March 27th. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? That's an amazing point that Michelle has just brought up. I'm going to read this. I see Pat's on the line. Hi, Pat. I'm going through some of Michelle's garage work right now. I'll get you on it here in a few minutes. So to repeat that, she said, also, rapture is March 27th, so if the worldwide rapture is March 23rd or 24th, which is Purim, then the 3 days of darkness would correspond with the days Jesus would be in the tomb before he would rise on March 27th. Since Purim is close to Easter, Christians looking for the rapture would probably be expecting the rapture on Easter more so than Purim, since Purim is not a major Jewish feast day. March 23rd would be just after the spring equinox, which relates to the Song of Solomon 2, verses 10 to 12, which talks about the rising up of the winter is past and flowers appearing on earth. Also, Matthew chapter 24 comes to mind. Verse 29 says, after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give her light. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear. When it speaks of the tribulation of those days, perhaps it's talking about the tribulation during the blood moon tetrad. It first mentions the sun being darkened, then the moon not giving her light. Well, there's a solar eclipse on March 9th, followed by a lunar eclipse on March 23rd, and this is the first solar and lunar eclipses after the tetrad, so the scenario would relate to Matthew 24:29. Speaking of scenarios, I will be working midnight shifts on March 16th, and she expects to go. She's strongly thought she might go working a midnight shift. And anyway, so that's all she could think of, except that she sent me another email later that day, and it said, I just saw some other day counts pointing to March 23rd. 777 days from February 5th, 2014 is March 23rd, 2016. Now, on the 27-day offset calendar, February 5th was actually January 9th, and that could relate to my meat cleaver dream, identify that 2014 is a year in January that fits exactly what I was shown. But I didn't manage to realize that until we'd gotten into 2016. So the January was meant to look back. So I believe this is interesting. So perhaps 777 days from when the cleaver came down is worldwide rapture using the 27-28-day offset calendar. I want to point out something. This was the 18th. In the last 24 hours, I've had three things come to me that brought my attention to the concept of 7 and 777. So just a little powdered sugar sprinkled on top of that one, because there's something it's hard for me to talk about it in detail, but there I'm sure that I was supposed to notice it, let's put it that way. Then she says, Jason had a date set for January 5th, 2015 for the rapture, 444 days from January 5th, 2015 is March 23rd. For our departure, this also relates to Marianne's 14th to 17th time frame, which should be leaving a week before around March 16th. There you go. Okay, and she wasn't done yet. Said, okay, here's yet another day count. Carol had a date set of either December 2nd or 3rd of this past year based on a dream she had that said there would be 3 to 4 days, then the fourth day. I remember that. On her date set, there was a major terror attack or shooting on U.S. soil. Well, 111 days past December 3rd is March 23rd, 2016. A lot of patterns here that she's finding that are overlaying. And then she sent another email that day and said, all right, here's yet something else. On the 753-day offset calendar, March 23rd, 2016, is March 1st, 2014, which is roughly the start of the Elijah pattern. The 28th of February is virtually March 1st. Also, on the pre-Julian calendar, the 83-day offset, March 23rd would be December 31st. And she says, my head is exploding with garage kid work, definitely. But a lot of really good stuff there. I went through it fairly quickly. If you found any of it intriguing, I do recommend you go back and listen again, because it was there's some really good stuff in there. And also, you can see how many things were overlaying each other and reinforcing certain specific conclusions. And then she sent me something about some events in the sky. I'm going to get into that in here in just a minute. Let me say hi to Mama Pat.
Yeah,
hi, Pat,
hi guys.
You?
Love you all. Yeah. I'm late because I have Miriam here. And,
no, that's okay.
As far as, yeah, Geraldine, I'll find out tomorrow. They don't have any word on her yet about the kidneys, so she's going to the rehab tomorrow, so that's good. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, that
all
is good.
All we can do is keep praying. Yeah. So
mm-hmm.
just keep praying.
Well,
yeah, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
interesting.
It's a quiet night here.
Yeah, I had a video, and it had a 144 on it, and I looked at the time, it was 555, so I thought that was interesting today.
Oh, my. Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah, I know. He just puts it right in your face. Then again, another 44, so
yeah.
They're all over the
right.
place, you know. Yeah.
Well,
oh, anyway.
I want to, it's kind of quiet. Mondays have been pretty quiet, as
yeah.
you know, and last Monday was not, but most Mondays typically are. And so I have
yeah.
been getting into some of Michelle's garage work, which I planned to do yesterday anyway, because Michelle's been sending me all this good stuff, and
yeah.
including things that I said mentioned before tonight, but it keeps sort of getting bumped down the road by other things that come up during the day, and I wanted to really dedicate a show to getting caught up with Michelle's
oh,
good garage
sure,
work.
Sure.
So... and let me get into this article. Michelle sent me a link to an article. It's out of Earth Sky magazine, and it's about right now. There is a full moon right now,
mm-hmm.
and the full moon and Jupiter are conjuncting, which means, in this case, it's about 2.5 degrees apart, in the sign of Leo and very near the star of Regulus. And Regulus is the brightest star in the Leo constellation. Obviously, Jupiter is the king planet. Leo is about the Lion of Judah and the king. And also, it is considered the end of the circuit of planets and stars in the constellations. So, in other words, the next one over, as everything rotates, is Virgo. And Virgo is like birth, virgin birth, what have you, then you make the circuit of the different houses, stars, whatever you want to call them. The Hebrew word name for it is the Maseroth, but whatever. The constellations, you go all the way around the ecliptic, and you end up at Leo, which is an end point. And so today we have the full moon conjuncting the king planet in the king constellation of Leo. And so that's what the article was about. And also, officially, it points out that the full moon actually occurred this afternoon, when, of course, we wouldn't have really been looking at it so much. But anyway, so we are just going past full moon at this very time.
Mm-hmm.
That was the article she had sent a link to. And now...
Yeah.
I'm going to just double check on myself right now because also she said, by the way, she thought today could be a really good. Oh, wait a minute. This is later. See, I was checking to make sure I was about to say I'm caught up with Michelle's garage work and stuff, and I'm not, which I'm glad I checked. So, so she says here. This is from the 20th, 2 days ago. So, okay, so I had two dreams this morning that had nothing to do, that had to do with traveling. In the first dream, I was in an airport with a group of people, and we were trying to find our way to the place that we needed to be. I don't remember much about this dream, except that it was really difficult to find out where we needed to be, so we didn't miss our flight. The airport was hard to navigate through. After I woke up from that dream, I had another dream involving travel. In this dream, I was with a group of people, and we were in a foreign country. I'm not sure which country, except that it was on another continent, maybe South America. This group and I were there on a mission trip of some sort. What exactly we were supposed to do was not made clear to us, and we were kind of on our own to figure it out. I was wondering if I was supposed to just start going up to random people and trying to share Jesus with them. I was at a complete loss and wondered what I had gotten myself into. I don't remember if the other people on the trip knew what to do either, but I was trying to follow them to see what they were doing. I wanted someone to show us what we were supposed to do. Then toward the end of my trip, my singles director for the local church I go to shows up. His name is Moses in real life. Not sure if he was with us the whole trip or just showed up then. Well, I remembered that I still need to get some souvenirs from my parents and didn't grand around to do it. trying to figure out and complete my mission. So I asked Moses where the nearest souvenir shop was, and he said it was about an hour's drive away. We only had a bus for an hour, a bus for our whole group, so me going to the shop was out of the question. We were going to leave to go back home the next day, end of dream. Not entirely sure what this dream means, not sure if it was dream meant for now or after we poofed. The part about me not knowing what was going on reminded me of Pat's dream where she shared yesterday about her and a group, this is 3 days for you, Pat, and a group of people getting ready to go on a mission but not sure what it was. So it's a dream dream, I guess. The fact that a guy whose name is Moses shows up in the dream makes me think we're all like Israelites wandering in the wilderness, waiting to be directed as to what to do and waiting to go to the promised land. In real life, Moses is going to not be the singles director past this month. He's moving on to the next assignment that God has for him. Not sure if this dream had any profound meaning or not. I have been getting a lot of travel dreams lately where I'm either preparing to travel or at the airport waiting to take off. Let me know if you're getting anything from this. I hadn't even read yet. So that's the first time I'd ever read it. And I do get a couple of things. First of all, I know Michelle's had a little bit of frustration knowing what to do. She feels like, I think she feels like she is wondering if she should be out there, you know, evangelizing, what have you. I think that's part of it. The airport that's hard to navigate through is this circumstance that he has us in. And I spent some time, Pat, at the beginning of the show talking about just the fatigue and how difficult it's been to pursue all these things, and including all the date sets, which I knew I was going to speak about later on. Navigating through all these things, understanding all these things is very difficult because he's asking us to do, proclaim, and follow leadings that we don't understand where they go or what they're about. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the airport that's hard to navigate. But as she says, overall, she has had a lot of dreams. I'm highly encouraged by the fact that Moses is going to be moving on to another position by the end of the month. And I think if there's any timing thing in there, it's obviously that. And that's highly encouraging. I think the rest of it, I'm not sure yet. I'll have to go back over. It is the first time I've read it. So anyway, at least I'm caught up on Michelle's garage work. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to double check. I'm going to triple check myself, but yes, I thought I was, and I am. And so that's really good. And so there you go, Michelle. I finally caught up on all the great stuff you sent me. And I'll try to do a little more about that dream and send, I'll reply an email to you if I can. That is pretty much what I had for the evening. I wanted to really just check in there, but so Pat, did you have anything else that you wanted to bring up?
No. I'm just the numbers and the. I'm stressed over Geraldine, you know. So I'm not just.
Yeah.
My head.
I know
that.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Know what?
Yeah, until I
we're,
find
we're
out
all
happening.
Being the world is tugging on all of us really hard. And,
yeah, sure. I know.
And
at least we
and
pray
it's
for
not
each
easy.
Other.
True.
Yeah.
True. I had to pray for Judy today. She is maxed out. I mean, life has intervened in every respect. She's super busy. And she had company come from out of town unannounced. And then she had to throw a birthday party for somebody.
It can get heavy. It can get too much.
And so, I mean, it was all worked out great, and she's happy about it. But she has very few spare minutes, let alone hours or days.
It can wear on you.
It's been intense. It does.
Yeah.
It's wearing on her. And
keep my daughter in prayer too. My Laura in prayer because she's maxed out with her job. I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but. Man,
right.
Her leg is hurting her all the time, and she's just in pain, and she's got all these kids, and it's just a mess. She's a daycare teacher. It's a mess. It's a mess. It's
mm-hmm.
a mess. Two
right.
people quit. It's a mess.
Right.
Yeah. And I had a rough weekend with my other daughter here, and Geraldine and things acting up, and it's just, I'm not going to go into anything, but you're right, we're being blatched.
we are, very much.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
so that's what it is.
I just look at the Lord and shake my head, and sometimes I just want to let out a scream, you know, like, but I know better.
Right, yeah.
Don't scream,
well,
Jesus.
Well, you know, I have kids who are in school, in Christian school, who are disturbed by the lack of the discernment, not only by their fellow students, but also by their teachers.
Yeah, sure.
It's everywhere, and the world is pressing in on those who know.
Oh,
and,
man.
a little squeezing goes along with every birth. So I'm hoping.
Oh, dear me.
We're definitely in a very poignant time. We've had some increases. We've had some times before where things were really more intense than normal, and this is definitely one of them. And I think we're definitely something. I don't know if we're going to be out of here, but and honestly, one of the reasons I don't know is because I'm not asking. I'm not asking, but
don't ask
because you know. I pick up the Bible and read through it, and I get garage work because I start to get insights. And if I ask him about date sets and our departure, he's going to give me a definite time. And so I just don't ask. And sometimes I don't pick up the Bible because I don't need more homework. And that's the literal truth. So,
I know. We can pray for each other. We know,
but
God has it, and that's our peace that God has
it. That's a mini testimony, because literally today I was able to talk to Judy for a few minutes today in the middle of the day, and I could just hear how drawn down she was, and quite frankly, she's discouraged, but you know, she's not happy that we're still having to go through all this. And you know, I was surprised and taken back because, you know, we all know how much energy she has and how positive she is usually. She certainly has no problem expressing herself. And then it just occurred to me, you know, I really need to pray for her. But the thing is, I was able to talk to her for a few minutes after she got home. And she said, and I prayed for her to have hope and to lift her spirit. And she said she was riding her bike home from work.
Yeah.
And she was praising and listening to praise music. And she said she's in a great place. And she could feel it. She could feel the lifting. She was motivated to do that because apparently, you know, it seemed to be.
Yeah.
So the prayers are connect, and the prayers that you're mentioning, they do help and they do matter. And in fact, they matter almost more than anything right now, given a good relationship.
We lift Judy up and just help her. You know, she's a trooper, but give her some extra strength and grace. And in the name of Jesus, we pray. We all agree. So, you know, just.
Well, she was actually having a great evening. She was having a great evening, but it changed.
It
changed in a positive way, but here we are. So anyway, Pat, I think I'm going to send us out with a little bit of music.
Go ahead.
I'm glad you were able to call in, and I'm sure these things with Geraldine are going to continue to sort themselves out.
It's in his hands. I have to.
Amen.
There's nothing else to say. He's got it. And I got to go along with whatever he decides. And that's fine. I mean,
That's right.
Really.
Well, at least we're not peddling the train, you know. We're just writing.
Oh, dear God. Oh, Lord, we're hanging on.
We're hanging
on.
Okay, well, there's more tomorrow. Love you all.
Yeah.
See you in here. Here we
go. Sure, no problem. Love you all, guys. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Elijah Mom, 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 El Today